This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9 is celebrating World Environment Day, brought to you by Indah Water Consortium.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Shanning. It's 7:18 a.m, Friday the 5th of June, and in about half an hour, we're going to be speaking with Datuk Muhammad Sahar Darusman, Chief of Employment Insurance at SOXO, about the state of unemployment and job losses in Malaysia. Right now, though, we are putting a spotlight on the environment.
BFM 89.9 is celebrating World Environment Day, brought to you by Indah Water Consortium.
So it's World Environment Day today, and in conjunction with the celebration, we're taking a look at environmental, social and governance investing, aka ESG investing. So starting from modest levels 15 years ago, it's now estimated at over $30 trillion. So ESG's popularity can be linked to a rising awareness and desire by certain demographic groups asking for investments that are both good for society and the environment, aside from their portfolio returns.
Now, is the question, Asian investors also jumping on the on this bandwagon? But apparently not. I mean, we are apparently still falling far behind our global counterparts in the take-up rate of ESG investing. And since the COVID-19 pandemic struck, how is that popularity still there, and will it still grow in Asia, is the big question.
So to help us understand this, we have on the line with us Benjamin McCarron, Managing Director of Asia Research and Engagement. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Ben. So has the COVID-19 pandemic enhanced or hampered interest in ESG investing, and could you tell us why?
Good morning. Thanks for the invitation, and happy World Environment Day. There's actually been a clear signal in our view. COVID-19 pandemic is enhancing interest in ESG investing. And the main reason for that is we're seeing a systemic risk happen. It was known about for a long period of time, and this has strengthened the conviction in many investors that they have to address the systemic risks elsewhere in environmental, social and governance factors, and in some instances act collectively to do so. And we're seeing that in fund flow as well. So Morningstar data from the first quarter showed a 30 billion euro inflow into ESG related funds. But there was an outflow of 150 billion euros for traditional funds or funds overall. And in the UK, a study by Federated Hermes showed that 85% of UK financial advisors had received an increase in inquiries about ESG in the first months of this year.
My question is, how is ESG actually being defined? Is there enough clarity and transparency in this regard? Is there like a global standard?
Well, there's actually a range of different approaches, and that is frustrating for people who want simple answers. But we also believe it's appropriate that clients have a wide range of options. After all, clients have different views, and that's appropriate. And ARE, we tend to consider three broad types of strategy. There's screening, integration, and engagement. When people talk about screening, that's very much what you don't want to own. So quite similar, the ESG lens is quite similar to Islamic finance lenses on that particular point. When we talk about integration, there's no longer really a moral question. It's just about pricing. If you see that you've got one business that's got good health and safety standards, that the employees are well taken care of, and you see another business where there's a lot of fatalities amongst the employees, the workers perhaps are demotivated, of course you'd prefer to own the first business. The question is, how much of a premium should you pay for the first business, or how much of a discount for the second? And that pricing question is ESG integration. And then the third topic, engagement, that's where maybe you own a company, maybe it's having a bad time managing its workers, and then as investors, you come together and get it to improve its standards. So we tend to look at those three, screening, integration, and engagement, as practices that cut across all of the different categories of ESG funds.
So what has been the growth of ESG investing like in been like in this region, and who are the investors here?
There has been, so you in the introduction, you mentioned that Asia has been behind. I first came to the region about 10 years ago now, and ESG investing was certainly in its infancy then. But in the last few years, starting really 2016, 17, 18, we've seen a marked uptick. It's perhaps been led by institutional investors, particularly large asset owners and pension funds, GPIF, for example, in Japan, and others around the region, GPF in Thailand, Kuap in Malaysia. And they are pushing the asset managers to address ESG and attaching ESG considerations to mandates. The other pocket that we're seeing in Asia is high net worth individuals as well.
And since you mentioned Malaysia, right, I mean, we do have a pretty robust framework in support of ESG investing. We have an index on Bursa. I think the SE has a framework. But how do we compare with our regional neighbours on this front? And in a way, can we leverage on this to be a leader in ESG investing?
So let's look at some of the starting points. As mentioned, Malaysia's long been a centre for Islamic finance, and that is a strong starting point. The other aspect that we see in the Malaysian market, which is quite a positive, is that there's engagement by some institutions, the Minority Shareholders Watch Group and the Institutional Investor Council, that are pushing companies. MSWG doing that at AGMs, asking questions to improve standards on corporate governance, and the Institutional Investor Council, which is the large GLICs and the large asset managers, pushing some of the underperforming companies and taking them to task to improve standards on governance. Those are positives. In Singapore, we've seen more of a focus and efforts to grow green finance, particularly in real estate, a lot of green real estate financing deals. We haven't seen that yet in Malaysia. And in Thailand, partly because the stock exchange has really pushed the companies and perhaps some other cultural dynamics happening in Thailand, some of the companies are leaders on ESG disclosure and performance, and many of those companies are moving up into global sustainability indices. So we do see that there's different pockets of strength in different markets.
So we're also seeing increased, as you mentioned, you know, increased shareholder activism for ESG causes such as climate change happening in the West. Do you see these similar trends, you know, gaining foothold and perhaps even more traction across the Southeast Asian region?
Yes. We see this as dialogue and constructive discussion. But sometimes constructive discussion can also be fairly robust. And we've seen in the US and Europe, for example, shareholder resolutions at the large banks, at the large oil and gas companies, Australia as well. And in fact, we've seen an increase in support for them these years, going back to the point earlier. So average voting levels for shareholder resolutions on climate change, 23% this year, compared to 16% last year. And these are telling the big banks, JP Morgan, Barclays, you've got to factor long-term climate change risks into your business planning and strategy. So are we seeing this coming to Asia? Absolutely. And my firm, Asia Research and Engagement, ARE, is in some cases leading that conversation. Last year, I attended the UOB AGM and read out a statement and asked a question backed by a number of large global institutional investors. Same topic, how is the bank thinking about climate change? What is the bank doing on fossil fuel financing? Actually, it was a welcome question and useful for all parties. In the rest of Asia, in Japan, we've got in a few weeks' time, there's a shareholder resolution at Mizuho. Same kind of question. Elsewhere, KEPCO, which is the Korean power company, they are being pushed now by BlackRock's just written about this. Why is the company making investments in power in Southeast Asia, in coal power? Are these wise investments or is this a bad strategy with financial risks for the future?
And Benjamin, very quickly, do we have data that shows that ESG investing doesn't necessarily mean that returns have to be sacrificed?
Well, actually, the most recent data on this, and we've looked at studies by both BlackRock and MSCI, is showing that during the market, the recent market turbulence, these companies are significantly outperforming. so the better quality companies. Other point that we think is absolutely critical going forward. Right now, the focus is on S and how are the employees being treated. But investors aren't the only investors. Governments are going to have to step up with stimulus packages and bailouts. And we think it's critical that the bailouts don't just address the short-term problems now, but they address changes in 5 years, in 10 years' time. And that means that governments really need to think how to stimulate the green part of the economy, renewables, sustainable agriculture, circular economy. There's lots of jobs in those areas. And that would be that would set us up for a much better future than propping up dirty industries, coal and fossil fuels that don't necessarily have so much jobs and will bring about the next systemic risk.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Ben. And that was Benjamin McCarron, Managing Director at Asia Research and Engagement. And I think, one of the things that he highlighted, which I do find quite interesting, is the fact that public scrutiny is starting to really turn its focus onto environmental factors when it comes to a lot of these institutions and where they invest their money. I think there was just I saw an article in The Guardian, I think it was just yesterday, talking about, how UK banks and investors to have been investing in firms linked with Amazon deforestation. And I think we had something similar here in Malaysia a few months ago as well.
Yeah, and the other thing which is interesting is that your returns don't have to be sacrificed. And we can look at that because in Malaysia, we have the FTSE4Good Bursa Malaysia Index. And actually, it has outperformed the broader KLCI over a five-year period, just slightly, but it has. So no, you don't have to sacrifice profit.
All right, and right now we're heading into the 7:30 News Bulletin, and up next, taking a look at how our neighbours down south are coping amidst the pandemic with analysis from Thilan Wickramasinghe, Singapore Head of Research at Maybank Kim Eng. That's happening after the 7:30 News Bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
This World Environment Day special was brought to you by Indah Water Consortium, New Life for Water.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.